Hello and welcome to Pillars of Wealth Creation, where we talk about creating financial success with a special focus on business and real estate. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer. Now, let's get to it. Hey, are you looking to expand and grow your business? Are you looking for that edge, that next step up, that paradigm shift? Well, one of the best ways to get you there is through a mentor or a coach. And today's sponsor, Trevor McGregor, he is the man. He's going to get you to be laser focused, to get you onto that next level. And I know from experience dealing with Trevor, he is a master coach, peak performance coach, well over 10,000 coaching hours through clients all over the world. And he helps you achieve better health, more wealth and freedom and contribution than you ever thought possible. Have that coach that holds your feet to the fire. Go on to Trevor's website, coachwithtrevor.com. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. And there you can get a free strategy session with Trevor. And you can decide if he's the right fit for you and you're the right fit for him. Again, it's coachwithtrevor.com. You will not be disappointed. Hello and welcome to another Hump Day Hustle. I'm your host, Todd Dexheimer, and with me is John Stiles with Bridge Realty. John, how are we doing today?
Doing great. It's a new year, and I am excited for 2018.
New year, same crappy weather.
Oh, this too shall pass.
Yes, yes. Hopefully it gets above zero sometime soon.
Yeah. I actually had my pipes in my apartment or my unit freeze, the place that we actually live. And so thankfully I was able to go stay at my parents' house for a few nights because it was frozen for several days.
the pipes or what?
So I live in a triplex, and it's really weird because I live in the middle unit.
Yeah.
And only my pipes to my hot water froze. Wow. So it doesn't make much sense, but it happened. And finally, it defrosted after the temperature got above zero. So
line must be close to an outside wall or something. You got to get that figured out because
I did find some small cracks, you know, where the AC condenser lines go through the wall.
Yeah.
Small cracks there. I think that might have been it because I couldn't figure out what else it would be. But I did fill those up, and hopefully that will help out the situation.
Because it gets colder sometimes.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Frozen pipes, especially when they burst, are no fun. I've dealt with that plenty of times.
Yeah, fun stuff.
So we're going to continue our talk about these pillars. Last time we talked about getting your mind right, getting that mindset, personal development, reading books and listening to podcasts and potentially getting a coach, stuff like that to get your mindset right. And then we talked about cash flow and how cash flow is really important and making sure that you're having income coming in more than your expenses. Having debt is okay, but if you've got cash flow that covers that debt, that's what we're looking for. So eventually the goal is, at least for me and hopefully for everyone, is to have enough cash flow passively to replace your income. Because when I retire, if I retire, which I probably never will, but if I retire, I want to be able to actually enjoy life more and do more things because I'm going to have more time on my hands. So why wouldn't I want to do more things? So I want my income to actually increase when I retire, not decrease. So,
yeah.
So today we'll go through the next two, which the next one is talking about appreciation. And one of the things that I hear people talk about on like Bigger Pockets and other places, they're looking for that cash flow, which is great. I'm 100% agreement with cash flow, but some will want to invest in markets like Cleveland and Memphis and other markets that don't have much appreciation. And not saying those markets won't, because you know I haven't done a ton of market research on those markets, so I'm not trying to bash those markets, but those are traditionally just cash flow only markets. and they don't have that appreciation. So if you're looking at that and you're going, I just want the cash flow, cash flow, cash flow. Well, then I think you're missing out on a big potential income generator, and that's appreciation. And you want your assets to increase at least, at the very, very least, at inflationary rates. But likely you want them to increase higher than inflation. I mean, that's the main goal, is you want your assets to increase faster than inflation. And it doesn't just mean real estate. It's anything. You know, if you're buying in oil, if you own businesses, whatever it is, you want that to continue to increase and appreciate faster than inflation. And that's the real winner, is when you can beat inflation.
Yeah. Well, so many people these days are buying assets that don't appreciate, like your vehicle. You know, maybe you go buy a brand new $100,000 car. The minute you drive it off the lot, it's no longer worth $100,000. Or other things. What are some other?
Well, I would even say your own single family house that you live in that you don't get any rental income in, because then you've got an asset, or not an asset, a liability that you're paying for. You know, if you got your monthly, if you don't do anything to your house, if you just pay the mortgage, insurance, and taxes, and the heat bills and stuff like that, your house will eventually fall apart and you've got nothing left over. It's going to be eventually worth nothing. So let's just say you live there for 15 years, your furnace is going to go bad, your roof's going to go bad, or, you know, maybe not quite in 15 years, but you get my point. AC is going to go bad. All these things are going to start to go bad. Things are outdated. And now your house is not worth really anything. It didn't appreciate in value because you just left it alone. So you actually have to spend money to keep it up in order for it to actually go up in value at all. So I would call a house as your own single family house a depreciating asset, or at least it might be okay because it's going to keep up with inflation. So it's not I'm not saying it's a terrible thing. I don't necessarily agree with some of the, you know, Grant Cardone stuff, and some other people that bash houses, but I don't think they're an asset personally. I just don't think they're an appreciating asset, because you have to put money into them. You're losing money every month to keep them up, to get them to quote unquote appreciate, at least with inflation. Now, a rental house, you have to do the same thing, but the difference is you've got the tenant that is, as long as you bought it right, is paying for all of that and then some, right? So you're getting them to pay all those maintenance. You're getting them to pay for that replacement reserve so you can fix that stuff. And then hopefully, if you bought it right, you're getting extra money every single month for that cash flow as well. So that's why I would say rental is an asset. Your own house is a liability.
Sure. Well, in either situation, you know, there's a lot of outside factors that can also influence whether it's appreciating or depreciating. You're kind of what part of the cycle of the market we're in.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and that's a good point, John. And so a house is kind of that sticky, is it an asset, is it a liability? But I would just call it either a liability or a mute point, because that's something we can't really control necessarily. A car, we know it's a liability, right? Unfortunately, a car is a necessary evil. So for me, I don't buy a nice vehicle. I mean, I'm driving right now a 2011 Chevy Silverado, which is a nice truck, but it's got 135,000 miles on it. And, you know, it's nothing too special. I drove a 2003 Nissan Altima up until 2012-ish, when I finally bought my truck, and or 2013 probably even. So I drove that for 10 years, had 200,000+ miles on it. I mean, to me, I don't have that dream, the desire to buy the Ferrari or the Porsche or whatever like that. I mean, those are cool cars, don't get me wrong, but it's a big liability, and it's just going to go down in value. Mm-hmm. So and most of the stuff we buy is a liability, right? I mean, you buy anything for inside your house or apartment, it's a liability. You buy anything to your clothes and all that kind of stuff, those are liabilities. I mean, everything we buy is a liability pretty much. Yeah. So you got to make sure you're buying some things that are going to appreciate in value and be an asset.
So real estate is obviously a big portion of that. Have you looked into a lot of other options for appreciable assets or?
Yeah. I mean, you've got precious metals, right? And so you've got, you know, gold and silver and all that kind of stuff. You've got oil and natural gas. And so those are definitely, I think, valuable things. I don't have a lot of money in that type of industry because I'm very real estate centric. You've got businesses. I mean, being able to truly invest in businesses, I'm not just talking stock market, although stocks are okay, but I think if you can actually directly invest into businesses, that's solid, especially businesses where you see growth. I'm not going to get into whether Bitcoin is good or bad or else, you know, but Bitcoin is potentially an asset, potentially something that appreciates. I would just be very careful if you're going to invest in Bitcoin, I guess. Some people love it. Some people think it's a joke. We'll find out who's right and who's wrong. I think in the next, you know, less than 5 years, probably five to 10 years or less.
Yep.
You know, really anything, John, that can generate cash flow has a chance of appreciation. So you just got to look at, can this become bigger than it is right now? Can it become better than it is right now?
Yeah.
So,
well, it might be helpful to mention that there's different types of appreciation, or for real estate specifically, you know, there's the general market appreciation, but you can also force appreciation.
Force, right.
Either by doing repairs or changing the use or different things like that.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a great point. You know, you're buying land. I mean, land in itself doesn't appreciate in value at all unless there's some fundamental change to that land, right? With zoning, you've got enough people want to buy your land, it doesn't appreciate. But if you know that buying that land, I mean, that could be a very good thing. I know people that they buy wooded property and they cut down a lot of the trees, you know, select cut a lot of the trees. They make a bunch of money on that. That's their cash flow. And then they wait for 5-10 years and sell it to a developer. They buy them just outside of that development ring. Nobody wants to develop there today, but within 10 years, they think that's where the development's going to happen. And I know people that are very successful at doing that.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I agree. I mean, you can force that appreciation. That's what I do with my apartment buildings, is I'm buying something that's distressed and I'm forcing appreciation. So the market doesn't even have to go up, but I can force, you know, 20-30% increase in value just by doing certain things to the property.
Yeah. So would you say that appreciation is something that is more of a long-term wealth building thing? I mean, there are ways to do it quickly, but generally appreciation happens over time.
I agree, but we're in a cyclical thing market, and it doesn't matter what you're in, whether you're in precious metals or Bitcoin or real estate or whatever you're in, it's cyclical. So is it long-term? Yes, it can be. You can, if you have that long-term outlook, you're always going to be fine, because if you're buying appreciating assets, you're always going to be fine because it's always, think of if you bought an apartment building or a house in 2006, right at the peak, the day before it all came crumbling down, that value in 95% of the markets across the US is now higher than it was in 2006. So everybody was screaming and running from the fire, but it went out and everything is now just fine. Yep. Now we're back above values in 2006. So yeah, you're right. It can be a long-term thing if that's the game that you can play. If you bought real estate in 2006 and you were able to cash flow it and you were able to hold that real estate, now you've increased the value to today where you could sell. And my guess is in another 30 years, it's going to be worth more than what it is today. But you could also buy it. You can look at appreciation two ways. You can look at it as a short-term gain too. If you're able to, I wouldn't play the timing, the market game too much, but if you're able to be in a good position to when the market does crash, go in and buy assets when everybody else is running away, like I did in real estate, like many people did in real estate, and like many people did to the stock market. When it crashed, everybody's running, and there's only a few people that are brave enough to go, I'm going to buy now, and then it'll go up in value. And that's what you have to do. And that's where you can play the short-term appreciation game, is when you buy at the bottom or near the bottom. And there's never that perfect when is the bottom, but it's when you know it's cheap. Mm-hmm. So that's the short-term. But yeah, I agree, generally, appreciation is long-term, just like cash flow.
So, and then people who were trying to play that game, but got in at the height of the market in 2006, if the short-term appreciation was their goal, and then they were disappointed with that strategy at that timing.
But here's what happens, John, is people do, and people are doing it now, and I don't think we're at the top, but we could be. But in 2006, what people were doing is, it wasn't cheap, right? And you knew it wasn't cheap. Nobody thought it was cheap, but people were afraid they were going to miss the boat. People were afraid that today's prices at $250,000 for a house were going to go up to $350,000. So they wanted to get in now, even though it didn't make sense. So if you follow the rules that I set up, cash flow comes before appreciation. Mm-hmm. Well, if you follow that and you're getting good, solid, true cash flow, we don't worry as much about what's going to happen with the timing of the market. Mm-hmm. But if we can look at it and go, well, if I can't get cash flow, I'm not going to buy it, right? Because how is it going to appreciate? That's where, if you're looking at timing the market or buying, like you said, for appreciation, and you bought in 2006 and you missed the appreciation, well, it's because you weren't paying attention to the first rule. Yeah. Or second rule, I guess, but you weren't paying attention to cash flow. Mm-hmm. So that's where you get yourself in trouble. And right now, don't buy unless you can get cash flow.
Yeah.
And that's one of my most, like the most fundamental rule for buying apartment buildings. I'm not going to buy unless I can get really good cash flow and unless I can force appreciation into that. So, but when the market does crash, John, you're going to get cash flow because the prices are cheap. And if you can say, wow, prices are cheap, that's when you should buy. Mm-hmm. I mean, hands down, that's when you should buy. Anybody says prices are cheap, even if they go, prices are cheap, it's just going to keep on getting cheaper. I don't care. Prices are cheap. Buy. Right? I bought in 2008. I bought a house in 2008 for $65,000. That house in 2010, had I been able to buy that foreclosed, I increased value on it because I did a bunch of renovations. But let's just say it's the same house in the exact same shape. I probably could have bought it for $50,000. So I overpaid technically. But in 2008, $65,000, it was still cheap. Now it's worth $200,000 or $170,000, probably $185,000. You know, so it's just people get too caught up in exact timing, but
yeah, definitely. Right. What you said about having it as a, be aware of it and shoot for it if you can, but have it as a secondary to cash flow.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We can't time markets. Nobody has that crystal ball. I wish we did, but or I wish I did. I wish nobody else had it, but just me. But we can't time it. So you just got to be smart and follow the rules, right? Follow what makes financial sense. If you can't cash flow, don't buy. So let's go on to our next one, and that's leverage. And leveraging your money and other people's money, well, it's going to allow you to accelerate your wealth quickly. And going back to what we talked about before, we've got assets and liabilities. We got to make sure we're leveraging assets that are truly cash flowing. Okay, so that follows the last two things I talked about. So we got to leverage true assets that are appreciating in value and that are cash flowing, because otherwise leverage is going to get you into trouble, right? And I know plenty of people that leverage just is like that drug, and they got to keep on leveraging. They're going to squeeze out every last dollar of their asset. And then when the market crashes, they're going to be in trouble because they took their cash flow from, let's say, $500 on a single family house down to $100 on a single family house. But they allowed themselves to buy a couple more. And so now they've got five houses that are making $100,000. They got all that appreciation. They think it's a great deal, but they really put themselves in a bad position. So you've got to be careful what you leverage and how much you leverage things. And now on our first show, I guess, when we started talking about this, you talked about leveraging other people's time as well, or in leveraging your own time. And I think that's really important to hit on as well. So definitely leveraging time.
Yeah. I heard somebody on a different podcast I was listening to talk about.
You listen to different podcasts, John?
No. I don't know. But they were just talking about how they were gotten to business for themselves and they just got to be so busy. Yeah. Oh, I think his son drew a picture of daddy, you know, and when he looked at the picture, it turned out it was daddy in front of two computer screens with two phones and two phones ringing or something like that. And he realized at that point,
steam coming out of his head,
that although, you know, he was doing well in business, he didn't have his why down. You know, that's another discussion there. But if then he started to leverage other people's time.
Yeah.
And take advantage of, you know, not take all the profits, but share some of the profits with other people, which then freed up his time, which was the true reason for being in business for himself.
Yeah.
And then be, you know, be there for his family. So, yeah.
Yeah, leveraging other people and other people's times and other people's interests. Of course, in a situation where you're going to be providing them with either money as a compensation or, you know, education or, you know, mentorship or, you know, whatever that might be, but at least providing them with something with value, obviously trying not to take advantage of people. That's never going to get you anywhere, but yeah, leveraging people's time. I mean, you have strengths. I have strengths. Let's leverage each other. I like doing certain things and other people like doing other things. Why not leverage that, you know, basically switch tasks? I mean, if you can't afford somebody or don't want to afford somebody or whatever, you can also potentially trade what you're good at with what they're good at to accomplish things as well. So
yeah.
There's more than just one way to look at leveraging other people, and then getting involved in networking. And I hate using the term networking because everybody thinks of just like going to this networking event where everybody's standing in the corner handing out business cards. And but you know, truly going to events where you're going to meet people that you can build positive relationships. And you know, I just talked with a friend of mine who took down a 192 unit apartment building
and he leveraged other people. It wasn't just his, you know, just he didn't find the building. He didn't bring all the investors to it, but he leveraged off of them to get into this 192 unit building. And now he's got a fantastic asset that he got into. And again, he leveraged other people to get it done, and other people's money. So it was other people's time and money. And he got this great asset. So, I mean, there's a lot you can do when you start thinking outside of the box and using other people, using other people's money. So,
yep. So, and obviously using leverage, using money as leverage is huge for getting ahead in real estate, you know, real estate specifically, because, you know, you can't really borrow too much money to buy stocks. You know, a bank isn't going to give you an 85% loan to buy stock, but yeah, they will do that for real estate. And while you got to be smart about it, like you were saying, you know, don't get too over leveraged, but use it smart, and then you can do a lot more than you could have otherwise. If you're just trying to save up, you know, $1 million of your own cash, you know, that's going to take quite a while. So,
well, that's a great example. And the power in real estate is the power behind the zeros. Mm-hmm. And so when you're buying one single family house, you've got one unit, you've got a purchase of, let's say, $200,000. But if you're buying a, let's say, 100 unit building for, let's just call it $20 million, now you've got a couple extra zeros. Now, if you leverage that money, you've still got extra zeros. You leverage more money by, like what I do as a syndication. It still is a bigger, you know, if you've got only 30% ownership of this 200 unit deal, it's still a bigger deal than one single family house. It's still more efficient, all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, that's true leverage right there. So that's network marketing. I mean, that MLMs, those are truly leveraged, you know, that's a truly leveraged business. Franchises, those are leveraged businesses. I mean, when you look at those, it's not leveraged necessarily monetarily, but those are leveraged businesses where you're using other people's time and effort and business plans and systems, and you're getting ahead quickly.
Yeah. So there's no use in reinventing the wheel, as they say, you know.
Yeah,
you're taking advantage of those systems that are already in place. So,
yeah, so you really got to think of what your business is and what, you know, what type of business are you running, and how can you leverage it properly? What are the things you can take advantage of to leverage your business? And the more leverage you can get, the better. I mean, anybody that's ever dealt with a lever knows that, you know, if you're trying to turn something by hand, it's a lot harder than if you turn it with a big metal bar or something like that. So,
sure. Yep.
That's just how it is.
Cool.
So I think that's good, unless you got anything to add with either leverage or appreciation.
No, I think we've all covered it there.
Okay. One thing I want to talk about real quick, John, you shared on LinkedIn, I clicked on it. I don't click on a lot of LinkedIn stuff. Sometimes I do, but so you clicked on, or you shared this thing that this guy was talking about, being more efficient with their time. And he specifically was talking about usage of his iPhone or his cell phone. And, I mean, take us through what he talked about.
Yeah. Well, and I posted it because, you know, I just mentioned to my wife that, it's difficult to stay focused during the day when my phone is such a key piece of my business. You know, everything's really centered around that. That's how I communicate with clients and prospects, and that's how I market myself. So, and it's constantly in my hand, but there's constantly push notifications coming to me, you know, notifying me about stuff that I don't necessarily need to be aware of right at that moment. So the YouTube video by, if anybody wants to go check it out, Chris Smith is the person who put it out there. You can Google him.
Call something.
Calls with Chris, and his company is Curator. It's a marketing company, but he talked about just changing the settings on your phone. You know, for example, if you keep the volume up, we'll turn down the volume notifications for your text messages, or turn off the notifications for whatever it is, Craigslist, Facebook, whatever it is that's going to your phone. You know, the fact of the matter is you're going to look at your phone later. That's just become, you know, a third appendage in our lives. Right. So just realize you don't need to know right when something happens. You're going to find it out later when you are going to look at your phone. So, yeah, so I think that's really helpful for everybody. You know, there's so many distractions that the ones that we can control, we should control. So,
yeah, he talked about, you know, I don't have any notifications that have ever popped up for Facebook or LinkedIn or anything like that. I just don't know. That's never been important for me, but I have always had, because it comes in the phone just as that, as notifications for text messages. And I went in there after listening to him and shut that off. Now I don't get any more notifications for text messages. While you were talking, I was looking at my phone to see how many text messages I got when I was on this call with you, and I got 3 text messages while I was on, you know, this call with you, and I didn't see any of them come in just because my phone, A, I don't keep it but right by me. And then B is I don't have those notifications on anymore. So I didn't even hear it. So that's great. I'm happy.
Well, it's so really important to kind of learn this balance in this age we're in. It's not like we can go off the grid completely. I mean,
you have to. Well, yeah, but I mean, if you want to truly continue to do business, you have to have you have to have your phone, you have to have your computer, you have to be, I mean, you have to be involved for sure. So, you know, one thing I did recently, John, that has helped me a lot, and you and I talked about this before the show, and it looks like you're doing a fantastic job at it already, is I've been time blocking. I did a podcast interview, which will play in a few weeks, with the guy who talked about time blocking. And I now have taken it to as extreme as I can possibly do, where I'm blocking out all of my day. I'm hitting the really important things first in the morning, the big issues, you know, and try not to hit too many of those. I try to hit, you know, 1 to 3 a day, and that's it. Because otherwise you get overwhelmed. But I block those out first, and then I continue with my day on smaller tasks. And I'm trying to block out everything. And I'm blocking out even when I'm going to check my voicemails and text messages. I'm blocking out when I'm going to check my email. I'm blocking out when I'm going to, you know, go on to LinkedIn, Facebook, you know, my social media. And I only really do that stuff for business purposes, but, so I'm trying to block out everything to be a lot more effective with my time and less distractions. And my phone, what I've been doing lately is I've been putting it, I've got a kind of a long desk, like 12-foot wide desk that's along one of my walls in my office. And so I put it on the other end of my desk. So it's about six, seven feet away. And that way I'm not looking at it. I'm not even seeing what's happening. I'm not seeing the phone, you know, screen light up after somebody calls me and stuff like that. So it's been good. Yeah. We'll see how long it lasts.
Yeah. I've heard about time blocking quite a bit, and I've implemented it to some extent. And, you know, everybody's personal situation might be a little bit different, but it's definitely helpful. Even as I mentioned to you previously, even just, we all probably keep some sort of to-do list, but I found that I myself would make my list and then I'd forget about the list because of all the...
Or ignore it.
Or ignore it just because of all the pressing matters that have to happen right now.
Yeah.
But now I've put on my schedule, first thing in the morning, open your to-do list.
Yeah.
And that's just amazing. I can actually check off things that are on the list because it's on my schedule to do that.
Yeah. So, yeah, and I've... I'm the same way. I always had the to-do list, right? But now my to-do list, I'll write my to-do list still, and I'll write it throughout the day. You know, if something comes up that pops in my head, I write it down. But then what I do with that to-do list is I go through it and I schedule it in my day. So then I'm hitting this thing at this time, this thing at this time, this thing at this time. And try not to let other distractions come up. Of course, they still do, and everybody's going to have that depending on the type of business you're in. But, I mean, you're a real estate agent, an investor, and so things are going to come up. I mean, it's just how it is. So, all right. So let's wrap this up. We're going to stop by doing the review of the week. So I've got a review by CSAM 31, CSAM 31. Check it out. Great content, great interviews, definitely worth checking out. And so that was actually a review that came in today. I appreciate that. Shout out. And you know, if you've liked this show or like what you hear, keep on sharing it with your social media, with anybody really that you think would enjoy this. That would be appreciated. John and I enjoy sharing every week, and I love doing the interviews. And hopefully, you know, everybody's gaining a lot of value with these. And I appreciate the feedback as well. And we've got a Facebook page too that everybody can go to and be part of. And if you've got questions that you want us to cover on a Hump Day Hustle, write those questions down. Let us know what you want us to talk about, and we'll try to cover them. If you got a question for me specifically, or for John, or for both of us, let us know, and we can try to answer any questions that you have too.
Yep. Thank you so much for listening here.
All right, John, you have a great rest of the day, and make every day Saturday, man.
You too.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the U.S. Our simple, proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Get your free copy of the Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com/guide. That's NORADA realestate.com/guide.